Tell us a little bit about what happened back in early 1960.
Okay, it is in the summer of 1966. The Ford Mustang was still a pretty new car in that era. And I was at Ellsworth Air Force Base in South Dakota, where the Minuteman Wing, the 44th, was. And we had 150 Minuteman missiles online and targeted daily for our cities and military installations in the Soviet Union. And I was the systems analyst, and this meant that I carried codes and keys and was the only person who could open and close these silos. Of course, I had teammates who had the same type of clearances and carried similar keys and codes. They were made up each time we opened the silo. The codes changed. The locks changed.
Did you have launch capability once you were told to launch, or was that someone else?
Yes. That would be the MCCC, the Missile Combat Crew Commander. But the systems analyst carried that launch power with him as they traveled and performed various tests on the missile. There's some kind of scary stories about that.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
We were chained to a little device called a missile launch simulator when we went out to test the missile. And we would faithfully take the missile out of the silo to do it. But you would then feed a fire code into it, and it would check out the equipment and pretend that it was going to fire the missile.
Now, and these missiles were nuclear capable and ready?
Absolutely. Okay. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, sitting alone on their own silo, and that's the kind of mystery and magic of them. Each little flight of 10 missiles had a buried capsule with a commander in them, and an assistant commander, who watched over these missiles 24 hours a day, 7 days a week on a three-day rotation cycle. And if anyone went inside the compound where the missile sat alone, you would get, George, what was called an outer zone security violation, similar to our motion detectors and that kind of thing.
Okay.
Today. And then if you disturbed the site itself, if you vibrated enough on top of the blast doors, or if you turned the safe locking mechanisms, or if you got downstairs into the inner zone, an inner zone security violation would appear. And of course, you can imagine that things like tumbleweed and antelope would hop over the fence every now and then, and we would get an outer zone security violation. And sometimes a glitch would appear in the system, and without an outer zone security violation, we would get an inner zone security violation. Neither one of those was terrible, and the MCCC, the Missile Combat Crew Commander, would reset his equipment and hold his breath and hope everything went back in its natural place, and it usually did.
Would armed soldiers go out there under...
Yes.
Okay.
Under yeah, that's what's going to happen next. But if you had these two events take place sequentially, so that you had an outer zone security violation, and then a minute or two later, with it not resetting, followed by an inner zone security violation.
Okay.
That's when the stuff hit the fan.
Then they figure whatever's out there is on its way in.
Exactly.
Okay.
And at that point, the MCCC would call up to his soft support building above his silo, or his buried capsule, and he would send what we call a strike team. A couple of APs with automatic weapons would hop in a pickup truck and go lickety-split across the South Dakota prairie or little hills until they reached the silo. It could be 10, 15, 20 miles away. It would take them 10 or 15 minutes to get there. Dirt roads, really open, rugged country.
Oh, so the perimeter was that far out?
Oh, yes. Yeah, these guys were way out, and they were 100 miles away from the base. But 10 or 15 miles away from the command centers. They sat alone.
Okay, now as you send them out and they go hunting, why not pop into a helicopter or something like that?
Today we would do that, and we would have security cameras and closed-circuit TV and all that. But this is 1966.
Okay.
The nearest helicopter was back on base. They were little Hueys like we use them now. And they did carry us back and forth and would be used at night as this thing began to unfold. But they were sound asleep at home when this started.
Okay.
So the MCCC just told these, you know, he probably picked up the phone and said, "Hey, Sarge, I got a situation out there at Hotel So-and-so. I want you to run out there and take a look and see what we got going on." And so these two APs hopped in the truck and headed out there. Now, they're patched back into, they called it Job Control Center on the base, 60, 70, 80 miles away. And there in the middle of the night, in their dialect, these two air policemen begin to see a flying saucer, what they described as a flying saucer. You can imagine the profanity and the exclamation marks in their language.
Right.
But it was unbelievable. You know, George, they topped a little knoll and looked down at the silo, and here, you know, expecting to see absolutely nothing. The duty is pretty boring. They see a luminous object 30 feet in diameter sitting on top of our silo. And around it are little objects kind of floating around in the air, according to them. And so the proverbial stuff hit the fan. And as the call went out down the chain of command or up the chain of command, the MCCC would call Job Control, and Job Control would call the Wing Commander. All those people were aroused out of bed, and instantaneous decisions were being made because it looked like we had a real situation here. We had something on our silo where it didn't belong, and no one knew what to do. The situation was so grave that it was decided, they're looking around in their haste as to what they can do. They're not sure they can believe these two APs. So they looked around, they saw they had a team of maintenance people not too far away, 20 or 30 miles away, at another silo. And that silo would have been open, George. You know, you penetrate the silo when the team goes in. And so here you have an open silo 20, 25 miles away, and you think to yourself, well, if we could pull that team from that open silo, we could get them over there to hotel flight to see what's going on. And that's what they did. And that's completely contrary to the book, because that leaves a nuclear silo with the door open.
With nobody there.
Nobody there, right? I'm sure they left an AP, but it's definitely against the tech orders, right?
For sure.
Yeah,
right.
You can't close it up. And they were panicked. And so by the time this second wave arrives, meanwhile, the call has come back to Job Control, and they're asking for volunteers who can go out and penetrate that silo. You actually have to give them the codes and keys, and you have to fly this group of men out from the base with the codes and keys so they can get into the silo.
And you are still at the base at this time?
Exactly.
All right.
And it was during that period, as that call began to come into the barracks, that I began to hear about all this stuff. You know, they were asking for volunteers, and what was it for, right? It was to go out to a silo and see, and you know, if there was, in fact, a flying saucer on it.
Did they seem to be panicking, John?
Yes, indeed.
Okay.
Yeah. We were all worried. We were all excited. And I'm still excited. It's been 40 years, right? Talk about it, right? It's terrible, right? But it was the most exciting thing that had ever happened at the base, practically. So at any rate, a couple of men were selected, and they put them aboard that helicopter, took them out. About that same time, shortly after the helicopter left, the team from the nearby silo arrived. And I was actually able to hear that conversation. I'd gotten down to Job Control where I could hear it on the radio. And here were men that I knew who I'd gone to school with for a year, who carried top secret crypto clearances and Q access and carried nuclear bombs with them every day on duty when they went back and forth to these silos. These guys saw the same thing. So there was no question that this was not some kind of optical illusion. There was an object on the silo. And they were on this side of the fence. The APs had not gone in to engage it or anything like that. And as I recall, the helicopter from the base began to arrive about the same time that the second crew had gotten there.